step out of the comfort zone, right? Because the reality that we are faced with today requires and demands it, right? And I say this, for me, it is a principle that cuts across both private sector, development, community, etc. Step out of the comfort zone of working in silos, right? Because the challenges that many of the governments and the people that we are concerned with face just need that to happen.
Hi everyone, this is Sumati Rajput from the Crisis and Disaster Risk Finance Program at the World Bank Group. And you are listening to Women in Disaster Risk Finance, a podcast series dedicated to women around the globe working toward enabling faster and more reliable financial response in countries affected by climate shocks, disasters, and crises. The private sector is an important source of finance and innovation for strengthening a country's financial preparedness to catastrophic events, be it availability of robust data and risk models, or access to private domestic and global markets. The private sector remains hugely relevant to enabling countries to effectively transfer catastrophic risk away from their own balance sheets. Oftentimes, development partners like the World Bank play an intermediary role to facilitate and subsidize these transactions. Welcome, everyone, to a new episode on the Women in Disaster Risk Finance podcast series. Today, we're in conversation with Ekhosuehi Iyahen, the Secretary General of the Insurance Development Forum, also known as the IDF, a public-private partnership led by the insurance industry and supported by the World Bank and the United Nations. Ekhosuehi has extensive experience working with governments, international development agencies, private sector entities, and academic institutions on public financial management and strengthening risk management and financing systems. Ekhosuehi has been directly involved in the implementation of pioneering innovative risk finance initiatives, including regional risk pools in Africa and the Caribbean. Welcome, Ekhosuehi. I'm so thrilled to have you here with us today and to talk about your experience working in risk finance all these years.
Thank you so much, Sumati. It's great to be here and to have this conversation with you. I'm really looking forward to it.
Likewise, I'm really looking forward to it as well. And because our listeners are probably looking forward to it even more, I'm going to jump right in. So really, to just get us started, could you tell us a bit about your risk finance story, how you developed a passion for this topic, and really what got you where you are today?
What a great question. So I would say it's been a bit of a journey for me in terms of my involvement in the risk finance space. And you use the key word, which is passion for it. I suppose for me, the interest really was sparked by, as someone from a developing country, just the observation when we look at the impact of disasters on developing countries and observing the impact that it has, or these events have, on people, businesses, governments, and really being interested in how can we do better? How can we improve the availability of financing to respond to these events when they occur? And how can we improve just general understanding of the risks that people have to deal with and encounter on a daily basis? But this really only came to a head when I went to undertake my master's at the London School of Economics, and I wrote my dissertation on the Caribbean Catastrophe Risk Insurance Facility, which had just emerged and was being implemented in the Caribbean. And out of that, I had the good fortune of interviewing the board for my dissertation. And following that, they'd subsequently asked if I would be interested in helping to implement this program in the Caribbean. And that was really a remarkable experience, really in terms of looking at how insurance can be relevant in a context where small islands were being hit by tropical cyclones, earthquakes, and really struggling to find ways to finance response. The establishment of this institution really being a way to begin to address some of those challenges. And that journey then took me to Africa and the establishment of the African Risk Capacity, again, another continental risk pool focused on drought risk. And again, working with African governments to establish their own institution on the African continent, to work with these same governments to try to distill what is the impact when we think about droughts on individuals, on governments, and how can we improve the effectiveness of our response. And that, again, I think was quite a remarkable development in terms of pushing the boundaries of innovation, in terms of really exploring how insurance can be proactively linked to direct responses to get financing into the hands of those who have been most affected. To cut a long story short, essentially that then translated into the current role that I'm in within the Insurance Development Forum, where we have a very specific focus on how can we leverage insurance and risk management capabilities that exist within the industry to support and drive resilience. And this for me is really a topic that is top of mind, I think, for everyone and could not be more relevant given the experiences that all of us have been through with COVID-19 and what we see with the impacts of climate change. So to your question, I think that, you know, my experience has really also been driven by implementation, right? Which is taking ideas in terms of conversations that we've been having for a very long time around risk management, the role of insurance, etc., but translating that into practical solutions on the ground. So practical solutions where we are working with governments, working with individuals, working with businesses to try to build an understanding of the particular risk that these entities might be faced with, but also the corresponding solutions that are required to deliver on that. So a lot of that is not simply about private sector. It's also about bringing various parties together to try to resolve what are very complex problems at a variety of levels.
Thanks, Ekuzwe. That is absolutely inspirational. You started with the reason why I'm here is because I'm passionate about this. And from everything that you said, that's absolutely evident. Actually, your intervention opens up so many questions, and it's very sad that we'll have to only pick a few of them apart. But perhaps I could start with something quite basic, because our audience obviously listens from all types of sectors and industries. So maybe you could start with talking a little bit about what you see the role of the private sector as when it comes to supporting developing countries design and implement their financial protection strategies.
Thanks, Sumati. I would hone in particularly on, I would say, the insurance industry and really thinking about that in its broader sense. And I think that they have a tremendous role to play when you think about, again, as you referenced in your opening, the impact of disasters and the liabilities that sit in many developing countries on the books of governments, on the books of businesses, and also individuals who have to absorb these shocks when they do occur. So for me, the role of the insurance industry is especially critical, particularly in developing countries, because it is how do we better manage those liabilities. And there are a number of things that we have to think about in this context, right? First, I think that there is a critical role that the industry can play in terms of bringing transparency and visibility and greater understanding to what these risks are. So if it is drought, what does that mean, as I mentioned earlier, in terms of impact on individuals, businesses, governments? Being very clear in distilling what those impacts are in terms of financial, but also social to some extent, impacts of these events. But beyond that, there's also the value, the inherent value proposition that the industry has to offer, which is the risk capacity that it can bring to bear in terms of transferring some of that risk. But closing the gap between the understanding of the risk and the deployment of the capital to help to manage that risk also involves some level of investment in terms of technical capacities, working with governments, as I mentioned earlier, to build greater understanding of these risks, but also the value of insurance, the different types of risk financing instruments, and trying to understand what makes sense in the context of the particular client, if it's a government or business or individual that you're dealing with. So I think that there's a tremendous role that the industry can play on that front. But again, it's not only about the industry. I'm a firm believer of collaboration, right? As again, you had mentioned, there's a significant role that entities such as the World Bank and the United Nations play in many of the contexts that we're engaged in. So part of the work is how do we deepen the conversations that we are having with these institutions in order to move the agenda forward. A third element, which I think is also quite important, is innovation. And for me, this is quite critical because innovation is really important when you think about the risks that many countries are increasingly faced with and people have to deal with. And the fact that there is going to be a need for thinking outside of the box to drive new kinds of solutions. And so there is a space here that I think that the private sector can actually play in terms of thinking through what innovation could look like. But this can only happen if there is true collaboration, if there's true investment in trying to understand the risk in order to develop things that are also appropriate.
Thanks, Ekuzwe. I think those three points that you highlighted really drive home the need for collaboration. And I think I'm going to actually pick up on this thread, which comes out quite clearly in the response that you just provided. You're absolutely right that there's need for the public and private sector to work together. So if I was to actually ask you, what in your view would be an ideal private public sector offering for countries looking to develop their financial protection strategies? What would that look like? And then where do you think we are currently vis-a-vis this offering? What are some of the obstacles, challenges that still remain?
Thanks for that. So I have to admit, I'm from the school of thought that approaches this question of, you know, what is the ideal, as I don't think there is an ideal offering, right? In a sense, right? Because that ideal is context specific and even time specific, right? So I generally try to avoid and I try to encourage avoiding a prescriptive approach where, you know, you fly in with a set of ideas in your mind and solutions that you think are relevant in a particular context, but really to encourage more of a conversation and a journey with the counterpart that you're dealing with to try to distill exactly what that problem is. And I think that we have to remember that for many of the contexts that we're engaged in, insurance and a lot of the risk management principles and concepts that we are engaged in are new in many quarters, right? There's often a need to bring together stakeholders to have conversations in terms of deepening an understanding of what that risk is. What does it mean in terms of impact? What are the possible solutions that could exist? So for me, the idea of an ideal public-private sector offering is a difficult one to say, oh, here it is, right? But I really see that as a journey that must be built on true collaboration with the counterpart that you're engaged in. In terms of where I think that we are on this journey, I would say that over the last 10 years, the past decade, we have seen tremendous progress in terms of an expansion of this conversation, the breaking down of silos within national governments, even within the private sector, and in interaction between the private sector and the public sector around these issues, right? And I think that this is positive. We are not obviously where we need to be when we think about the gaps that exist in many developing countries, when we think about risk financing kinds of solutions, but we are seeing some remarkable changes. I think, for example, the existence of the Insure Resilience Initiative as a G7, G20 endeavor to really focus in on the issue of the role of insurance in helping to drive resilience is unprecedented in many ways in bringing together stakeholders around this concept. Even as an institution within the IDF, some of the programs that we have launched with the V20 group of countries focused on risk and resilience analytics is unprecedented again in many ways, where you have a group of developing countries really seeking to have a partnership with the private sector focused on really helping to strengthen the understanding of risks that exist, but also to drive the kinds of solutions that might be relevant in that context. So I do think that there's been a lot of progress, but certainly a lot more that can be done. Some of the challenges that I see in this space, I would just maybe highlight four of them. There's still a lot of work to be done in terms of cultivating trust amongst institutions. This is an issue, and I think that you can identify with this, Sumati. When we think about insurance, there's often a lack of understanding, and part of that needs to involve a concerted effort in terms of education around the opportunities, the benefits, but also limitations in terms of what insurance can offer. So there's a lot of trust building and education that needs to take place in terms of insurance and its value. There's also another element to this, which is when you go through the technical process of trying to develop a risk financing solution, it ultimately puts on the table who pays for this, right? And how is that payment structured? And this is a difficult one when you're dealing with countries that are facing considerable fiscal constraints in terms of financing for education, for health, for COVID response. So when you then table issues around, okay, drought risk and dealing with floods, etc., there is a recognition and appreciation of the problem. But in terms of affordability, there are real questions that many governments and individuals and low-income households have to contend with. And so I think that part of the challenge that we face is really to think about this issue of how do we structure these systems and how do we finance and pay for the kind of risk financing systems and protection systems that many are calling for. Another element that I think that adds complexity to this space is the reality of the ever-changing risk landscape. Again, thinking about climate change and the uncertainty and complexity that introduces in many quarters around the world. How do you grapple with that? How do you reconcile that in terms of the significant changes that governments have to undertake in terms of how they pursue development and what development looks like and what resilience looks like and how insurance and risk financing solutions fit into that? So I think that we're still very much on a journey in this space, but it's one that I am encouraged by despite the complexity and the challenge, because I am seeing very concerted efforts to collaborate, to work together, to try to make some some critical breakthroughs in this space.
Indeed. I'm fascinated by how you described the ideal partnership, which is there is no ideal partnership, but it's very customized and specific to how we approach countries and make this happen. I think you know, your answer is spot on in terms of there's no silver bullet. There's no one way of doing this. And there's also steady progress, like you said. I think bringing stakeholders together in itself is quite a first natural step to getting somewhere. And you're right to say that there's many forums now that are allowing that to happen. I just want to pick up on one of the challenges, which I think is interesting to note. You know, when you talked about the competing priorities for how countries should prepare for financial preparedness related instruments, you talked about different shocks and disasters. I think this is a huge step forward from where we started, you know, when countries were talking about whether this is even important. So there's huge momentum now, and countries now are thinking about this in a much more mainstreamed way when it comes to their own development planning. And the question now is, how do we make sure that they address the different risks that they face rather than are they even willing to address these risks? So I think that's commendable on the part of developing countries that, like you said, have these hugely competing development priorities to face.
Yes, but you know, Samati, we are also at an interesting time because I think that we've seen a lot of negatives, right, from the impact of COVID. We've seen a lot in terms of an appreciation when it comes to climate change, the catastrophes that are not only in developing countries, but also developed countries for solutions. So one of the opportunities that I think that we are faced with that will allow us to make significant leaps in this space is there's an opening, I think, within the public space, within the society in general, within, you know, the individuals to understand better and to take more seriously the issue of risk, right? And the kinds of protection systems that we have in place to actually take care of us when we are affected by these shocks. And I think that for those of us who are engaged within this space, if it is the insurance industry, if it is the World Bank, the United Nations, it's actually a chance to build on that conversation, to accelerate it, right? In terms of the intensity of the conversations that we have in governments, but also to begin, as I mentioned earlier, to think critically about what are those solutions, because there is an appetite to engage in many governments around this topic. But the challenge is really to break down, as I said earlier, some of the silos and approach this in a much more mature way when we engage with governments or businesses around the topic.
Very well articulated. I think that's absolutely fundamental. And since you touched on the different stakeholders, I wanted to bring in a stakeholder that you referred to in your introduction, because I think that is a very fascinating story that you've got, where you actually started off working on risk pools with your dissertation, but then went on to working on CRIF and ARC. It would be very interesting to hear a bit about that experience that you had, and also, you know, how the private sector could actually play much more of a role when it comes to strengthening these regional bodies, which are being recognized, obviously, as most of our developing partners, as key stakeholders within the risk finance agenda. So how do you think that the private sector could actually play a role in strengthening these regional bodies so that they can better serve the needs of our clients?
Yes. So great question, Sumati. I think that there is a lot that can be done in terms of the private sector's engagement with these regional entities. So maybe if we look at their variety of regional institutions that exist within this space, I think that there is scope to deepen the conversations, say, for example, with regional development banks, right? When you look at the engagement with governments around the risks that they face and risk financing in general, these conversations can be bettered. They can be enhanced, right? So I do think that there is scope for that in terms of working with the regional development entities. And in addition to that, I think that the developments that we are seeing in the establishment of regional risk pools, such as CRIF and ARC and PCRAFI and others, also bodes well, because it speaks to these regions really recognizing and appreciating the importance of this agenda. And so from my perspective, I would say that there are three ways in which the private sector can really help to shore up some of these institutions. The first is deepening the technical expertise. Many of these risk pools have initiated what I think is a remarkable development across the regions that they exist in terms of improving the availability of quality risk information. But there is still a lot more that can be done on that front. And this is an area where the insurance industry can play a significant role. There's also, I think, scope for investments and support around innovative products. When we think, for example, around flood risk and the complexity associated with that, there's a real need to really craft better partnerships that will allow for the industry to engage with governments directly, also partner institutions to develop more meaningful solutions. And I think that these are some of the ways, not only in terms of the risk analytics element, but also in terms of supporting development of public goods, supporting the development of human personnel and technical expertise. It's also about thinking about innovative solutions. And for me, these are some of the areas where there could be tremendous synergies created between what the industry has to offer in supporting some of these developing regional mechanisms.
Those are extremely effective recommendations or ways of working together. So thanks a lot for sharing those views. I have one maybe last question, and I usually always pose a slightly inspirational question to our speakers. But you know, if there was one key message or one key takeaway that you wanted all the practitioners working in this space to take from this conversation, what would that be? Be it the insurance industry, be it the public sector, be it our clients, what would that message be?
Another great question. I suppose from my perspective, I would say step out of the comfort zone, right? Because the reality that we are faced with today requires and demands it, right? And I say this, for me, it is a principle that cuts across both private sector, the development community, etc., right? Step out of the comfort zone of working in silos, right? Because the challenges that many of the governments and the people that we are concerned with face just need that to happen, right? As I mentioned earlier, when we think about, you know, the deficiencies that were revealed in terms of the protection systems that exist globally, these are not problems that can be solved by individual institutions or by the private sector alone, right? And this requires, I would say, a little bit of humility in terms of maybe the institutional expertise or the technical expertise that sit in single institutions to really think about how do I craft partnerships that will allow me to overcome some of these challenges so that I can be even more relevant for those people who are most affected currently by the crisis that we are faced with. And so for me, I think that that would be my most important message, is to step out of that zone and be open to collaboration that is focused on driving solutions for people on the ground. And, you know, there's a little bit of humility that must come with that.
That's a fantastic message for our listeners. And I think from this conversation, it's very clear that for us to make progress together as the global community that cares about having countries be better prepared for shocks and disasters, that there's no prescriptive one silver bullet solution, and there's also no one way of doing anything. But the way to do it is to adopt a more collaborative approach of working together across different stakeholders, be it public, private sector, as well as kind of regional organizations. And really, as you said, which I like a lot, is for us all to step out of our comfort zone and find new and innovative ways of working together. So thank you so much, Echo Sway, for sharing your candid and inspiring views with our listeners today. It's really been a pleasure to speak to you, and I hope I have the opportunity of discussing this more with you when I see you in person, which will hopefully be soon. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Sumati. Really appreciate it. It's been great.
Today's podcast would not have been possible without the contributions of the Crisis and Disaster Risk Finance Knowledge and Learning Team. A special thanks to Olivia Mahul, Kavya Krishna, Peijing Li, and Sonal Chinjwadkar, as well as our production manager, Aditya Babu Upadhyarla. Most of all, thanks to all of you for listening to another episode of the Women in Disaster Risk Finance podcast series.